This is Matt Wells at UN News. UN human rights expert Agnès Callamard has been involved in some of the most talked about stories of the past year, from investigating the killing of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi to condemning the arrest of WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. Ms. Callamard has also been highly critical of Malta's response to the killing of investigative journalist Daphne Caruana Galizia. And in October, alongside fellow special rapporteur David Kaye, she called on the Maltese authorities to do more to find those responsible for her death. Shortly after that appeal, she sat down with Conor Lennon in the UN News studios in New York. He asked her if she was surprised that the investigation into the death of Ms. Galizia has not made more progress.
Yes, of course I am surprised. This is a country that is a member of the European Union. It is a country with at least a workable democracy, with a commitment to the rule of law. So, I am surprised that no more progresses have been done. They have arrested two hitmen, but they have not proceeded with their trials. And the mastermind behind the assassination of Daphne Caruana, the masterminds have not yet been identified or named. So I would have expected Malta to be more of a model or an example in terms of fighting impunity for killings of journalists. Unfortunately, so far, after 2 years, much remains to be done.
Now, they say that they have set up a public inquiry. Do you welcome this?
Yes, so the public inquiry is a good step. And just to say that the public inquiry is the outcome of much pressure and the outcome of demands by the Council of Europe, and in particular by the rapporteur who investigated the rule of law in relationship with the killing of Daphne. So his report was in fact made public the same day my report was made public on the killing of Jamal Khashoggi in June, and he recommended a public inquiry. The government has now taken steps toward this public inquiry. We are not yet, we don't know yet what is the composition of that committee, and we are waiting to hear more about it.
So how hopeful are you after all this time that the family of Ms. Galizia will find justice?
Well, I remain hopeful. I believe that with the public inquiry, if the composition of the committee meets the standard of independence and impartiality we need, that public inquiry could really dig into all of the issues that Daphne was investigating, which may have triggered the assassination. I am hopeful that a good committee will be able to work and push further the police investigation and present to Daphne's family and to the Maltese society and to us more generally the an outcome which will meet our demands, which is we need to know who the mastermind behind the killings are. So yes, I remain hopeful. I remain hopeful that again, provided that committee has a proper composition, as an impartial, independent members running it, I think we can see some real development.
You mentioned that the public inquiry came about after a great deal of pressure. Do you include your statements as part of that pressure that's made a difference?
Look, the statement that we issued with David Kaye, a while ago now, I hope had an impact. We had a range of exchanges with the Maltese authorities, exchanges that are in writing for most of them and publicly accessible. I think, to be perfectly frank and objective, I think the Council of Europe and the work done by the rapporteur there the commissioners for human rights work, I think was probably more impactful and, you know, had a more direct relationship with Malta and with the government there. So, yes, I'm sure we've had an impact. Let me add something, because one of the issues that that David Kay and I had raised in our first communication, or one of our communications, was the continuing lawsuit against Daphne, even though she's dead. That, to me, is still the situation right now, nothing to do with the public inquiry. A number of individuals, including members of the governments, are holding on to their accusations against Daphne and to the lawsuits. In my view, the continuing legal process against Daphne is really meant to create fears, to have a chilling effect on freedom of the press and freedom of expression in Malta, and aims at also creating a climate of fear for the family. That's unacceptable. I mean, that must stop now. Those continuing lawsuits against someone who has been assassinated for work, you know, it's almost obscene, and it must stop.
Now, this is, of course, not the only high-profile case that you've spoken out against over the last year or so. I'm thinking of the arrest of Julian Assange from WikiLeaks, the Kashmir communications shutdown, and, of course, the killing of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Now, your statements, they're often very blunt and widely reported. That's part of your role as being a special rapporteur. What kind of criticism attacks do you and your colleagues have to deal with?
So some of those, in fact, all of the statements that you are mentioning are joint statements. They brought together the Special Rapporteur on Freedom of Expression, David Kay, the Special Rapporteur on Freedom of Association, Clément Voule, the Special Rapporteur on Human Rights Defenders, Michel Forst, and myself, the Special Rapporteur on Arbitrary Killings. Those joint statements, in my view, are extremely important and very powerful in that they send a signal to the authorities that the critique that we are addressing are based on a broad range of issues. They are not a single questions. They concern human rights as a whole, and they demonstrate the solidity of our partnership as special rapporteurs. So that's the first thing. And it has an impact on the question you're asking, because to the extent that we are a group of mandate holders addressing the government, I think we also feel more protected. We feel more strong and stronger in our determination, because numbers play a role in that process. Doesn't stop trolls in social media. It doesn't stop governments from criticizing us, sometimes in terms that are really inappropriate, and that's happening. But it is nothing compared to the threats that the people on behalf of whom we are working are experiencing. So you mentioned Kashmir, for instance. Journalists and human rights defenders in Kashmir, but also in India more generally, who wanted to cover Kashmir, have experienced a great deal of pressure and threats. You know, when it comes to Julian Assange, my colleague Nils Melzer, who on his own, actually, in that case, he really took the work as a special mandate on torture. He committed to investigate the situation of Julian Assange. And by the way, I was with Nils Melzer last night for a workshop on Julian Assange. So I'm talking a little bit with some good information. He was alone in his investigation into Julian Assange's and whether the attacks against Julian Assange amounted to a form of psychological torture. He took a very strong position, a very principled position, driven by the evidence that he captured with two other experts that came with him. And in response, he has found himself very much the object of many attacks and targets. And I personally am extremely impressed by the work he did. I think it was extremely courageous to take on Julian Assange's defense, because Julian Assange is probably one of the most vilified public figure right now, including from states that are supposedly human rights friendly. So what Niels did on his own, I think, demands to be commended. And I'm very pleased to have the opportunity to do that in public.
And finally, is there any particular incident over the last 12 months, anything that has particularly shocked you or particularly marked you, or that's really stood out?
Well, look, my own inquiry into the killing of Jamal Khashoggi has certainly brought findings and information that shocked me, of course, the nature, the brazen nature of the attack against Jamal Khashoggi, the fact that that it took place in a consulate, how they dismembered his body, the planning that went into the killing, every single aspect of the killing of Jamal Khashoggi is shocking, and I think it meant to be as well threatening. Now, the other thing that shocked me, but for a very different reason, is the ability or the attempt on the part of governments around the world to move on. You know, originally, at some point or another, most governments are going to make a strong statement. And I welcome those statements. But very quickly, there will be an attempt to move on to business as usual, to just keep doing business with Saudi Arabia, keep supporting Saudi Arabia for geostrategic or economic reasons, and never adding act to the statement that were made. I was shocked by the G20 meeting in Osaka, when the US president literally embraced the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia a few days after I published the finding of my report. Nothing personal at all in my reaction. But I thought, come on, you know, this, there is my report, there is a work done by others. All of those are raising extremely serious questions regarding the responsibility of the Crown Prince, and they certainly, my report certainly pointed to the responsibility of the state of Saudi Arabia for the killing. It was so inappropriate to go out, for the US president to go out of his way to demonstrate his affection for the Crown Prince in the way that he did, in a very public way. That, I think, was shocking, as was shocking the silence of everyone else at the G20 meeting that were in the room, in the meeting, witnessing the instrumentalization of the G20 meeting, and yet not saying a word and not trying to demark themselves from that instrumentalization. That, to me, was shocking, and that is something I'm hoping states are going to not pursue. It's one thing not to act, but it's another thing to be silent altogether. And we cannot afford for our governments, human rights-friendly government in particular, to be silent in front of or when confronted with an instrumentalization and a politicization of meetings for the sake of trampling on human rights protection.